Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. Jim, let's start with the good. This from the Chicago Sun-Times. Gun dealers can set up shop in Chicago. A federal judge has ruled declaring the city's ban on firearm sales unconstitutional. U.S. District Court Judge Edmund E. Chang, who, by the way, I believe is an Obama appointee, wrote in a 35-page opinion published Monday that Chicago's 2010 ordinance banning gun sales within city limits, quote, goes too far in outright banning legal buyers and legal dealers from engaging in lawful acquisitions and lawful sales of firearms. Some believe that even though the judge has stayed this decision due to the city's likelihood of appeal, that there could be gun sales in the city by the end of the year. And obviously, just like Washington, they'll get as close to a full ban as they can get away with. But it's good to see that even liberal judges see that the Second Amendment still lives, Jim.
Yeah, I think it was R. Charlie Cook who had noted that this is really the third really big decision that has gone against the states and localities, the first one being D.C. versus Heller. Then Chicago's gun ban was struck down. Then there was this decision, which basically further amplifies the preceding one that, no, when we say that you have to permit people to own guns in Chicago, it doesn't mean maybe. It doesn't mean if the city council feels like it. There is a Second Amendment constitutional right there that the city is absolutely infringing. One of the intriguing things about this is that, you know, judges create these rulings, and then cities and city councils and mayors turn around and enact basically the exact same law and then wait for the next legal fight to work their way through it. There really needs to be something a little more punitive, I think, on the part of these judges to say to cities and, you know, localities that when you enact an unconstitutional law, you're violating the Constitution. That's, you know, a very big deal in this country. It's supposed to be. If there's no consequence for violating the Constitution, then the Constitution might not even, you know, might as well not be there. Nonetheless, it is good to see a judge come to the right decision. It's always fun to see the city of Chicago get smacked down, or at least the laws of the city of Chicago on guns getting smacked down again. Liberals have been furious about Heller, which basically said, yes, you know, the D.C. gun ban is struck down. Localities cannot ban guns. I bet you they would love to see that exact same issue go before the court again with a different makeup of the court. So I can't help but wonder at some point, a couple of years down the road, when perhaps one of the conservative justices has retired or passed on, that there'll be a push to do this again and see if they can get a 5-4 decision in the other direction. So, you know, the gun rights of people in Chicago appear to be getting closer to actually being realized. You know, the outlook is still a little bit hazy for the Second Amendment in places like Chicago.
I know that one argument that the left is making here that conservatives are particularly enjoying, although kind of in a macabre way, is that, see, in 2012, there were slightly more than 500 homicides in Chicago. Last year, there was only slightly more than 400 homicides. So they're suggesting that's an indication that gun control works.
But wait, weren't the exact same gun control laws in place earlier?
I believe so, yes.
Actually, haven't they loosened them slightly? So in light of that...
All right, on to martini number two now. And most of the attention on the 2014 midterms is on the Senate and whether or not Republicans, in the wake of the horrific rollout of Obamacare, can cobble together a net gain of 6 seats to regain the majority. But at the same time, of course, the GOP has to hang on to the House of Representatives. And due to redistricting following the 2010 elections, it looked like that was going to be pretty easy to do because there aren't that many competitive seats. But something that's happened here in the past few weeks is that a lot of Republicans who are pretty comfortably holding otherwise competitive seats have decided they're done on Capitol Hill. They're going to retire. We talked about Frank Wolf a few weeks ago, more than 30 years in Virginia. That's going to be a tight race. Tom Latham in Iowa, that's a state that's not chopped up by the usual political methods, and that's going to be a tough race. John Runyon in New Jersey is not going to run again. And then just yesterday, Jim Gerlach from suburban Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, decided that he's not going to run again here in 2014. And immediately, Larry Sabato of the Center for Politics at the University of Virginia moved that from safe Republican to toss-up. So, Jim, there's still a strong likelihood Republicans will keep the House, but they're going to have to play defense in some places that they didn't expect to.
Yeah, and a couple of things that are kind of revealing out of this. One is that you know, most of these districts that are not, you know, ones that Republicans have managed to hold on only because of a entrenched incumbent. These are swing districts, which means Some cycles are going to swing your way. Some cycles are going to swing the other. So it's not a sign for panic for House Republicans, but it is a point of concern. Obviously, this means you're going to have to, you know, probably have primaries of seeing who the successor to the Gerlachs and the Runyons of the world are going to be, you know, the Lathams of the world. And these are, you know, areas where the right Democratic candidate very well could win. Republicans are probably going to have to spend some money in these races. The other thing I think is kind of intriguing, certainly in the case of Runyon and a couple other of these guys, is that a good portion of the House Republicans came in with the Tea Party wave of 2010. And, you know, they came because they saw the passage of Obamacare. They saw the passage of the stimulus and the enormous amount of waste there. They saw the runaway debt. And you had quite a few folks who had been successful in the private sector saying, you know what, I am running for Congress because I feel like my children's future is at stake. I have to save the country. I have to save the country from going too far to the left and Obama leading us to ruin, and I'm going to do that. And it was a great rallying cry and sense of spirit in 2010. And then they come to Washington, and they have their fights with Obama all through the 2012 cycle. Most of these guys got reelected in 2012, and now we're heading towards 2014. And all of a sudden, you know, it'd be wrong to say it's not fun anymore, but you know, these guys are suddenly realizing that it's not going to be a two-term matter of saving the country. That in other words, getting the country back in a more rightward path, a more free market path, is going to take at least till the end of the Obama administration and then probably sometime after that. And it's going to be a long, hard slog. And I guess some of these guys are kind of asking themselves, do they want to spend the rest of their lives in Congress? And they're saying, you know, at least a certain number of them are saying, no, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to turn into the entrenched incumbent that I was running against. I don't want to turn into a guy who begins to see his office as a entitlement or something that I'm, you know, I will bequeath to my successors like a, you know, some sort of monarchy. And on the one hand, it's kind of refreshing to see people saying, I'm a citizen legislature and I don't intend to stay here forever. As we mentioned earlier, it does create some headaches for the party keeping that seat. And, you know, I kind of would hate, you know, some of these guys had seemed to have bright futures ahead of them. And you kind of feel like some of our talent is leaving the stage a little bit early, but I suppose that's their choice. Just got to hope to find good successors in those districts and, you know, win them in November.
Bigger question here. John Runyon, of course, was known as an offensive lineman for the Philadelphia Eagles who used questionable tactics at times. So are you more surprised that he's retiring after two terms or that he hasn't chop blocked anybody on the House floor?
Yeah, he hasn't been ejected yet. There you go. Yes. So considering the state of the Eagles offensive line, maybe he's making a comeback.
All right. On to martini number three now. And one of the issues that has different members of the Republican Party at odds with each other and kind of on the left, too, is the NSA debate and just what role the government has and how much power they should have in trying to prevent terrorist attacks. And two of the biggest combatants on the right in this fight have been Rand Paul versus Peter King. Peter King was on Fox News with Jamie Colby, and he was reacting to Rand Paul planning to file a lawsuit against the NSA for infringing on Americans' civil liberties. And here's what Peter King had to say about that.
If we listen to Rand Paul and follow his policies, Americans could die because the NSA has stopped attacks against the United States. Right here in New York, the Zazi attempted subway attack in 2009 with liquid explosives was stopped primarily by the NSA. If Rand Paul had been around and we listened to him, hundreds of New Yorkers would be dead today. That would be on his conscience. Or maybe it wouldn't be. Maybe it wouldn't bother him. I don't know. The fact is he has to realize there's an impact from what he says. If we follow his policies, it's going to lead to the death of Americans.
I can understand why people are passionate on this issue, Jim, and I know a lot of libertarians would beg to differ on the Zazi case, but we'll leave that for others to hash out. But the idea that he's making this personal, such as that Rand Paul wouldn't care if New Yorkers died as long as certain civil liberties were protected, just doesn't improve the debate.
Yeah, I mean, this is a topic that intelligent conservatives can disagree on. And in fact, many intelligent conservatives do disagree on this. And, you know, my perspective, which tends to irk everyone, is that there are no good guys here. The NSA's activities are outrageous and terrible and further, you know, should be ceased and should be worthy of rebuke. But at the same time, there's no reason to celebrate Ed Snowden as a guy who's super duper terrific and turn him into this glamorous hero because he violated his oath and also leaked not just the domestic surveillance stuff, but a whole lot of information that is harming U.S. national security. This all started when Rand Paul had said that he believed that Snowden doesn't necessarily deserve clemency or an amnesty deal, but that he doesn't think he deserves the death penalty or life in prison. And I guess to Peter King, this is way too soft. Perhaps he should get life in prison and then the death penalty or perhaps a reverse order. Peter King, like, and here's the thing is that I find there are Peter King has reasonable points to make. He just finds an amazing way to say them in the least reasonable way possible. as you mentioned it, personal. Or the other thing he said was he recently declared that Rand Paul doesn't deserve to be in the Senate. Well, Congressman, that's up to the people of Kentucky. It's not up to you. And so you want to talk about, you know, he obviously implies that he doesn't care about it. He says that Rand Paul's part of the hate America crowd. Every civil libertarian stereotype of an authoritarian, Orwellian, big brother defending goon, Peter King manages to live up to in this interview. And I guess, you know, congressmen spend enough time living in a bubble where they have no sense of how they're perceived to people around them. And it's kind of frustrating to see that this is a point in which I think that certainly on demeanor points, on terms of ability to make the point clearly and non-incendiary and bombastic, which, as I said, are adjectives that you could apply to Peter King, but also apply to his IRA buddies, incendiary and bombastic. Peter King manages to do a great deal of damage to the causes he believes in by making the arguments the way he does. And I hope someday somebody he trusts can pull him aside and say, you know, Congressman, this is not the way to make your points. You're not winning friends. You're not really winning arguments here. You're just kind of creating a freak show for the cable news networks. And, you know, somebody like Rand Paul, as much as you might disagree with him, doesn't deserve to be, you know, accused of not caring about terrorism or hating America or anything like that. But somehow, Greg, I don't think Peter King will be getting that message.
Sounds like you're still on the fence about a possible Peter King presidential bid there, Garrity.
You know, I mean, Peter King, by some miracle, gets the Republican nomination, and you would see the lines get so scrambled in the sense that there'd be a lot of Republicans who'd be like, I can't, you know, like, you know, certainly the Rand Paul and Ron Paul crowd wouldn't vote for it. I think there are a lot of other conservatives who feel like Peter King is just way too credulous. His defense of the NSA programs, I think, is starting to approach bad faith in the way that he reflexively attacks the morality and the conscience and all that stuff of his opponents. It's not a respectful debate, and it's kind of frustrating to see that this is one of the preeminent Republicans in the House of Representatives, Greg. Way to go, Long Island. Way to go.
Jim, we'll leave it there. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.